Views expressed on this program are those of the hosts, guests, and callers, and are not necessarily those of this station, its management, or other advertisers. You're listening to Transformation Talk Radio.
This show's audio was via a Skype call.
Get fired up for Spirit Fire Radio with your hosts, Dorothy Riddle and Steve Kramer. Get ready to shine the light on universal spiritual principles and uncover ways that ageless wisdom can guide you in cultivating consciousness in these modern times. Bring purpose to your life through practical spirituality and add to your awareness with Spirit Fire Radio. Now, here are your hosts, Dorothy Riddle and Steve Kramer.
Hello, listeners. We are delighted to be with you for another episode of Spirit Fire Radio. And when I say we, I mean myself, Steve Kramer, and my delightful co-host, Dr. Dorothy Riddle. Hi, Dorothy.
Hi, Steve. Great to be with everybody today.
Awesome. So we're going to continue our discussion on nonlinearity here on Spirit Fire Radio. Dorothy and I spend an entire month talking about a universal principle. That is our goal. That's our intention for season three of Spirit Fire Radio and our second season together. Yes, Dorothy. So yeah. But we're going to talk about how we mature. And, you know, from the outside, maturity appears to be directly linked to time, which would make it seem linear. But is that so? So we're going to discuss that today on Spirit Fire Radio. But before that, we had an interesting question come in about a past show that is, in a fascinating way, very linked to nonlinearity. So, Dorothy, would you like to tell our listeners a bit about that email?
Yes. I'm delighted to, and I want to thank our listener for the question. And we just thought this particular question was wonderful to answer on the show rather than just directly. So the question was about the discussion that we had last year on the fallacy of multitasking. And it raised the question of whether, you know, you weren't multitasking if you did something like reading while you were doing a routine task like ironing. And so we'd like to help just clarify a few points, and particularly for those who were not with us for that discussion last year. So there's a lot of discussion about multitasking, and in fact, neuroscience confirms that multitasking is a fallacy, that we do not do two things at the same time. And what we actually do is we switch rapidly and sequentially between tasks. And if we're doing that switching very, very fast, it may seem like we're doing things simultaneously, but in fact, our attention is switching. And so there's an experiment, Steve, from the Danish Potential Project that I think could be really helpful to our listeners in understanding this. So I'd like to take a moment to explain it. I tried it myself. It really is quite fascinating. So the idea is you take a piece of paper, you've got two lines, and on the first line you write or print, "I am a great multitasker." Now that has 20 characters. And then on the second line, you write 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20. So you've got 20 letters, you've got 20 numbers. And you've done that sequentially. Then you take another piece of paper, you've got two lines on it, and this time you try to do it simultaneously. So you would write the first letter, then the first number, then the second letter, then the second number, then the third letter, the third number. And what you'll find if you do this and you time yourself is, first of all, it takes a lot longer to try to be doing it that way. And secondly, the likelihood of a mistake, unless you're peeking over to when you wrote out, "I am a great multitasker," increases as you go along. And so what that demonstrates is a phenomena that is called response selection bottleneck. In other words, our brain, as it's trying to choose what the next thing is that it should do, it's got a choice coming in from the numbers, it's got a choice coming in from the letters, and there's a little bottleneck that happens that we have to sort out. So when we think that we're multitasking, one of the things that could be happening is what some people describe as continuous partial attention. That is, we're giving a little bit of our attention to both things or three things or four things, and it feels like it's all happening at once. Or we may be putting our primary attention on one task and leaving another task to operate kind of automatically, especially if it's habitual behavior. But I think the thing that we miss is, let's just take driving, which is an activity that many of us do. If we're only driving, what we may miss is the fact that we are actually doing many tasks sequentially. So we look in the rearview mirror, we look ahead on the road, we look to the side, we check our rearview mirror on the side, we look down at the speedometer. And those of us that have been driving for a long time, all of that happens so rapidly and so automatically that we think that we're doing just one thing, just driving, but in fact we're doing many different things. So that's another way of illustrating the fact that we're actually switching our attention between many different activities. Now, if we do something like talk on a cell phone while we drive, one of the reasons why that's not legal, at least where I live, is that as soon as we really focus our attention on another task, even though we know how to drive, the likelihood of our not being able to respond quickly enough to something that is unusual means that the rate of accident really goes up. So these are just a few ways of helping to explain that we are not actually multitasking. Does that make sense, Steve?
It does make sense. And I agree that there are sort of habitual activities. For instance, the person was asking about somebody ironing and reading a book. I think that you're using certain parts of your brain while reading the book, and the ironing is just becoming rote in a way. You're just sort of going back and forth, you know, with an iron. It just becomes this sort of habitual motion. So it's what's that?
Yeah, but actually, Steve, if you have ironed, you'll know that as you iron, you do glance down. Even if you're reading, you do glance down because you have to make sure, you know, how are you doing that crease, that kind of thing. Unless you're just ironing a flat piece of cloth, you do have to keep paying attention. And so that's the rapidly switching of attention, even though it seems like the ironing is just going on its own and our attention is on the reading.
Yeah, well, what I was going to say is one has to give way to the other. You know, I feel like there's areas of the brain, you know, you just simply can't read and absorb letters, you know, and get that done. It reminds me of when we're driving and we realize, whoa, I haven't really been watching the road, and our brain has just been following the lines on the road. Certainly we've been switching back and forth, but we get the appearance that we've been driving and doing something else. It makes me think of I was thinking of how often we do that, you know, how often sort of our very busy lives gives us this opportunity to appear to do so many things at once, and how that limits the fullness in which we can engage in those things. Like if we are, you know, eating something and we're checking a text message because we can have our phone in our hand while we're chewing, and we go over to turn on a light, how much are we taking in? You know, we've got to only be taking in small amounts of each one. We're not really tasting the food. We're not really engaging in a text message, and who knows what we could bump into as we're going to turn on the light. So, you know, it's not multitasking at all. It's sort of just reducing the level of engagement in each thing because we're having to switch back and forth between each.
Well, I think also, Steve, one of the premises of multitasking is that it increases efficiency.
Yes.
And so not only do we have scientific evidence that, in fact, it doesn't, and there are a number of studies on that, but it raises the question, you know, what's the purpose of our life? Is the purpose of our life really about increased efficiency alone, right? I mean, there are times when it's important to be as efficient as possible, but you were just raising, I think, a really important point about the quality of life, the quality of our experience.
And, you know, that brings us to this week's theme quite literally. I mean, because what is efficiency? That is, how much can we get done in a certain amount of time? You know, if we become so time obsessed, it says, you know, that's a very linear way of thinking. I've got this much time and I've got this many things to accomplish in that amount of time. And it seems like as we mature, some of us think that maturing, or we get the sense that maturing is really about refining our skills, which can be, in a way, efficiency. So, you know, it sounds a bit like a reduction to me even. Some would say that efficiency means we get more done. But as you say, that's not the case. Scientifically, we've proved that. So is maturing more about growth? And what does growth mean? Does it mean our capacity to experience something on a deeper level, have a fuller experience, or expansive, a wider experience? You know, as we mature, are our experiences more meaningful to us in a personal way? You know,
right. And is it possible that it's both?
Yes.
Does it have to be either or?
Yes.
You know, that's just a little precursor to what we're going to be talking about next month in terms of non-duality. But really, it is about appreciating where we are. It's about quality and also the quantity of what we're able to achieve in a particular time if we've made commitments to get those activities completed.
We had a very interesting, we had a silent retreat here at Spirit Fire Retreat Center, and we had somebody come in who teaches the Alexander Technique, and she had everybody laying on the ground, myself included, and she said to us, "I'd like everybody to get up." And everybody just stood up really quick. And she said, "It was really interesting to watch all of you, because I told you to get up and you just immediately, all of you did what I said in a very rushed way." You know, I didn't say get up very quickly or get up, but we learned to just sort of respond very quickly, which is, you know, the brain, someone told me to get up, I'm going to get up. And she gave us this lecture about essentially, it was about quality and how to lay back down and take our time. You know, think about how we would like to get up. What does it feel like to get up? As I stand up, what parts of my body are engaged? So, you know, one might think that as we mature, when someone asks us to stand up, we'd stand up in our own way. My way would be different than your way because I know myself that much better. Not the case. We all just zoop right up. Dorothy, we're at our first break. That was a lovely interlude, or a lovely prelude to this week's show. So, listeners, stick with us. We'll be right back after these messages.
Stay juicy. Tune in to Your Juicy Love with me, Una Drake, co-hosting monthly with Dr. Pat, and every second Monday at 12 p.m. on Transformation Talk Radio. My show, Your Juicy Love, helps you find the dynamic, life-affirming love you've always wanted. Transform your relationships and bring peace, joy, and juicy, juicy love to planet Earth. For more information, visit unadrake.com.
Conscious Confidence Radio, a timeless wisdom with Sarah Maine. Tune in each month on Transformation Talk Radio and join Sarah on an adventurous journey to the deeper level of meaning to move beyond today's world of constant change, confusion, and uncertainty beyond the shadow of fear. This hit show explores key concepts such as confidence, values, and attitude in a dynamic way. To learn more about Sarah and her work, visit sarahmaine.com.
Are you looking to grow spiritually, expand your consciousness, increase psychic abilities? Well, there's a free app for that. Pure Light offers audios that transmit high spiritual frequencies to help you awaken to your full potential. Hundreds of audios created by some of the world's top energy healers, and many are free. Enjoy the latest in conscious technology and download Pure Light today. To find out more, visit purelightaudio.com.
Hi, I'm Barbara Scheidegger, clinical hypnotherapist and founder of Swiss Hypnotherapy. And this is a tip with purpose. Be willing to make a change for the good. If you want to know what your thoughts were like in the past, look at your body today. If you want to know what your body will be like in the future, look at your thoughts today. This was Deepak Chopra who said that. And it's true. But it's never, ever too late to make a change. And many things can be reversed. If you put your mind into it and make an effort, now you can make the change and tomorrow you will feel much better. Start now and look forward. Past is the past. There's no future in it, but in the now, you can find the future for tomorrow. I hope this tip helps you. You can reach me at SwissHypnotherapy.com.
Hello, listeners. Welcome back to Spirit Fire Radio. Dorothy and I love to take a moment during each show to talk about our organization. Spirit Fire Radio is a collaboration between Spirit Fire and the School for Esoteric Studies. Dorothy, would you like to tell our listeners a bit about the School for Esoteric Studies?
Absolutely. Listeners, you'll find out more about us at esotericstudies.net. We are an educational nonprofit that provides spiritual training to persons who have a spiritual practice that they want to deepen. And we do this through meditation, study, and service. And we also have group initiatives that we undertake. And one of them is to collaborate with other like-minded groups, to purposely reach out and collaborate. And if you are with a group that would like to collaborate with the School for Esoteric Studies, please look us up at esotericstudies.net, and you'll find out more about the organizations that we're already collaborating with and what we're looking forward for in partners. This radio program, I'm delighted to say, is one of our wonderful collaborations, and I'm very grateful to Spirit Fire and to Steve Kramer that we're able to do this together. So once again, we're at esotericstudies.net. Over to you, Steve.
We talk about, you know, cooperation and collaboration so much as being such as being a universal principle that we all should look toward and participate in, which is another principle. And so, you know, it has been just such a wonderful and enlightening experience to be doing this show with the School for Esoteric Studies. So Spirit Fire is an educational nonprofit as well, and so beautiful that we have in common this goal of really expanding people's awareness and their consciousness through meditation, study, and service. Both the School for Esoteric Studies and Spirit Fire both hold these three endeavors close to our hearts and our work. We've got our own meditation practice here at Spirit Fire called the Practice of Living Awareness, and it's online, it's free, and we'd love for you to check it out. You can look under meditation at spiritfire.com. We've also got a meditation retreat center in Western Massachusetts, which we where we have retreats that support that practice. We do online classes as well. So again, spiritfire.com. Dorothy, we're going to start now, huh? Like officially talking about maturity. How do we mature? How do we grow? Is it linear in fashion? I'm wondering if you have a quote this week.
Oh, I do. And here it is. Experience and curiosity drive us to make unexpected offbeat connections. It is these non-linear steps that often lead to the greatest work and the greatest maturation, I would add, as well.
Yes.
And one of the things, Steve, that I want to just say up front for our listeners is my original training was as a psychologist. And as I look back on that training, it was entirely focused on a linear process from birth to adolescence. That was the whole game. And at that point, there wasn't even much interest in anything that might happen to people after adolescence. But it was very grounded in that Newtonian rational man model, that there's a series of predetermined hierarchical stages to move one towards becoming objective and independent by the time one is of legal age. And the psychological testing that I was trained to do, the therapy models that I was trained to use, all of them assumed this hierarchical predetermined stage. It's amazing looking back.
Mm. So that field has matured, one would say, yes?
Well, I'm not sure that it has. It's matured in the fact that it's recognized that there is adult development, and you know that everything doesn't stop at the end of adolescence or even earlier, but there's still tension in terms of, you know, what is maturation all about, and there still tends to be a focus on, you know, resolving conflicts, resolving weaknesses, rather than focusing on strengths, although positive psychology is certainly making a contribution. But the overall goal, and I think this is a really important point that gets lost because it's not stated necessarily explicitly, the overall goal of these kinds of models is a separate, independent self-identity. You know, that's the whole point, is to become independent. And we have negative commentary on things that, you know, like codependence and that kind of thing. But if we focus on being independent of everyone else, first of all, we know that that contradicts what our actual reality is. You know, we talked about this together, Steve, for a month, about interconnectivity. We're all part of the same energetic field. We are not separate and independent from that.
Yes. Well, and even if you look at really from birth to death, anybody who's ever cared for an elder, I myself helped care for my grandmother, you see that it is circuitous, that as we get older, we return to that innocence and even curiosity, I would say, and the need to be cared for of a child. So, you know, there's even a circuitous nature about it in that way, just to think of the difference between a straight line and a circle, just to be so simplistic, right?
Yeah. Well, also, the assumption is, you know, that we are, you know, that we start from being this helpless infant, and then we evolve, you know, we learn, we grow, that kind of thing. What if, as a hypothesis, you know, based on the saying that we've referred to a couple of times, that we are not humans having a spiritual experience, we are spiritual beings having a human experience. What if what's happening is that the soul enters the body and has to learn how to manipulate and manage the physical body?
Yes.
So those early stages are that early learning. And one of the interesting research areas to me, Steve, along that line, is babies learning to sign, because they can communicate a lot through sign language. Their vocal cords, you know, their ability to speak doesn't develop that quickly. So we think of them as not able to really communicate. But if they're taught sign language, they can communicate very, very effectively by the time they're 6 months old.
Well, even when we think of our of being in the presence of a child, we are in the presence of this sacred being. I mean, we really sense that we are in the presence of a soul. When you put it in those terms of we come in as a soul and then we learn how to use this vessel, this instrument, and that takes time, you realize in a way we, in talking about that circuitous nature and that curiosity of the beginning stages of life and the end stages of life, it's beautiful to sense that within a child. You know, I think about the brain, a child's brain, that there's, you know, there are 2 million, I believe it is, new connections formed in an infant's brain. It's like every second, it's insane. I mean, by age two, a child has over 100 trillion synapses in their brain. So these connections to understand the world around them, which is double what an adult has. So as you're a child, you have this sort of like panoramic brain, right? Your neurons are relatively unconnected to each other and they're just taking it all in. And then it's that use it or lose it. As we get older, we make these connections and we sort of prune them back. And as we get older, they become fewer and stronger. So we learn how to be an individual or an adult. And as a child, you're just experiencing the world as this vast, adventure. And even we see people that want to get back to that childlike mind, right? There's a book by writer Alison Gopnik, and this book is called The Philosophical Baby. And she talks about the distinction between a child mind and an adult mind, and the childlike mind being called spotlight consciousness, and an adult-like mind being called lantern consciousness.
And I think you've got that reversed.
Reverse. Spotlight consciousness, adult and lantern being the child. So it gives the adults the ability to focus very narrowly, right? Like a spotlight. And the child is just taking it all in. Again, like this panorama. So, you know, if you use that measure, so children are more conscious because they are taking more in. Their brains are receiving more. So she says in the book that children seldom exhibit that sustained period of spotlight consciousness, and that adults occasionally experience this illumination that is the lantern consciousness. So that's interesting in those terms, we're taking it all in as a child, and that curiosity you were talking about in the quote.
Well, another image that I'd just like to offer is the spiral, because again, we get very linear when we think about this line, this growth line. But if we think about it, and it fits very much with what you were talking about, if we think about our awareness as expanding and then focusing in, so, and that's part of how we learn, right? We take in a lot of different data, and then we refine that. We prune it down to what is actually relevant to us. So if we think of our self, however you want to call that, some people call it the ego with a small e, but you think of yourself as that centered place of who you are, and then you think of yourself as expanding out and then coming back, expanding out. It's like a Tai Chi joint hands exercise, but spiraling around that center, who we are, rather than are moving along this linear line.
And it does seem like as we become adults, we have a tendency toward that linear model. We have a tendency toward, I would almost say, to repeating the same thoughts again and again. And we've talked about that as well, that we become habitual in the way we use our mind. And if our thoughts create our reality, then sometimes we don't have that expansive spiral, you know, as we'd like to imagine, swirling, taking it all in at a distance with a lantern. Dorothy, we're at a break, I just realized. So hold that thought. And when we come back, we're going to continue this discussion. We'll be right back.
Did you know that all of the shows on the Transformation Radio Network are available as podcasts to stream or download?
Really?
Check us out. Go to transformationradio.fm. We have business shows, spiritual shows, energy healing shows, and pretty much everything in between. Something for everyone guaranteed to inspire, educate, and transform. We are transforming the world one listener at a time.
Living Lighter Radio with Jason and Patricia. We have an ecosystem approach to your life. Tune in weekly every Monday at 1 p.m. Pacific on Transformation Talk Radio as we, Jason and Patricia, discuss what's truly holding you back. We offer you the tools you need to reach your goals and at the same time be living lighter. For more information about Living Lighter, visit www.livinglighter.org.
To find answers to life's questions, you need to look within yourself. Dr. Glenna Rice brings your questionable conversations on Transformation Talk Radio each month. Tune in each month for insight into how you can live up to your full potential. Dr. Glenna is a physical therapist, certified Access Consciousness, and Access Body Class Facilitator. How does it get any better than this? For more information on Dr. Glenna Rice and her work, visit glennarice.com.
Love Living Radio Ignite Your Whole Being with Emily Perkins is a show for those looking to explore the sparkling magnificence of their inner selves. Tune in every second and fourth Wednesday at 4 p.m. Pacific as Emily sheds a radiant light of love on the beauty and power that resides within you. Discussing love in all its forms through conversations that provoke awareness, curiosity, and expansion, Emily shares the unlimited power of love. For more information or to listen to this show, visit lovelivingholistics.com.
Dream on, fly high, and live adventurously on The Laura Meeks Show. Tune in each month on Transformation Talk Radio as host Laura Meeks guides you in finding your unique gifts and bringing them to life. As a certified life coach, speaker, and veteran bomber pilot for the U.S. Air Force, Laura knows how to follow a dream. She is ready to support you so you can dream on, fly high, and live adventurously. For more information on Laura and her work, visit flyhighliving.com.
Wow. Hey, everyone. Welcome. Welcome to the Dr. Pat Show. This is Talk Radio to Thrive By. I'm telling you, I got to pinch myself some days because when each of us gets called to do something that we so not thought was in our wheelhouse to do for a purpose that's so much greater than us, we get to show up and shine.
If you would like to show up and shine on the Dr. Pat Show as a co-host or sponsor, send us an email to inspire@thedrpatshow.com.
Welcome back, listeners. Before the break, we were talking about the ways in which we mature. Does it seem linear to you, or does it seem non-linear? Does it seem like you are maturing by taking in the world in a 360 way or directly what's in front of you? And Dorothy, I think, you know, we do think about the past and the future so much. It seems that the past informs our future. And so many of us actually, sometimes even emotionally, you know, we're worried about what happened in the past. We're sort of worried about what's going to happen in the future. How much are we here in the now? And I know through both of us, for both of us in our organizations teaching meditation, at the very, you know, the laying the groundwork of meditation is teaching people how to be in the present moment. It's the now that really offers us access to potentiality, to all that there is happening at once, right?
Well, and we also know, and this is one of the themes for this month, that time is just a construct. It's everything on a certain level does exist at once, and we divide it up into past, present, and future just so that we don't get totally confused. We know what's going on. But I wanted to make a slightly different point, Steve, if I could, and that is, you were talking about, you know, people kind of getting ground down habitually, thinking, you know, the same things over and over again. I think the whole concept of lifelong learning is really helping people with that. You know, the fact that people are reaching out to have new experiences, and even older people, instead of being described or describing themselves to themselves as elderly, which has this kind of decrepit image that comes along with it. You know, we're talking now about active seniors. You know, there's elder hostels. There are academies of lifelong learning that are reaching out to people who have moved into another phase of their life. And I think that that's very exciting.
Yeah, very exciting times indeed. We, you know, here at the retreat center, we will often have people coming to the retreat center just wanting to try something new. We had a silent retreat here in the last weekend, and we had lots of elders who really just felt that they wanted to spend some time in nature. It was a silent retreat. And for a lot of people, and one young man, actually not an elder, but talking about rote thinking, or just how our mind becomes so specialized in a way as we get to a certain age, and we are sort of, he has two teenage daughters, he has a successful career, and he, something in him said he wanted to try something new and go to come to this silent retreat. And so it's 3 days you're in silence. And for a lot of people who've got busy lives, who have a busy home life, teenagers, it's loud. And at first he just thought he wanted some quiet. So as he got here and realized, well, we're going to do quite a bit of meditating. We're going to be contemplating silence, and being in silence for 24, 48 hours for somebody is a pretty big deal. So one day into it, he wrote a note that said, you know, would you have any suggestions for something for me to do other than read? What can I do in our free time? And on the note, he said that when I'm reading, I sense that I'm totally in my head. And I really do love to read, he wrote, you know, but he was looking for something more. And so we took it into the group, and a number of people had that sort of that question of what to do in their downtime. And I told them to go out to nature, spend some time in nature, you know, just go deeper into each experience, that which you are participating in, right? We talked about that last month. See if you can just go deeper into that experience. And he had this amazing discovery about trees. He talked to everybody about this connection he had with trees, about their strength and their height, and a sense that they were connected to everything and that he was connected to them, which is everything we're talking about. But what I found interesting in his note was that I could sense the personality, which one might say is the ego, like the small e ego, which is the sense of self, which was saying, I want to read. Here's some downtime. I'm here, and I'm going to read some books because that's what I know how to do. But the soul, that which wanted to sort of expand and go deeper, said, I sense there's something more. And he went with it, which was great, and felt that sense of interconnection. So sometimes we've just got to go out on a limb, no pun intended. You know, we've got to try something new. And the word curious, I love that you brought that up in the quote, was a word that I used quite a bit in presenting to people. Get curious. Get curious about your mind's reaction, even your emotional reactions to, oh, what's this silence thing? Or what arises in the mind when we're quiet? Or just curious about eating a beautiful meal or spending time with the tree. So curiosity, I find so important to realizing that, you know, we don't just always go from A to B to C, go to a silent retreat, read a book, relax, go home. It's really about discovering. A really beautiful experience.
Yeah, that's really lovely. I want to link back to just before the break, when we were talking about, you know, more linear models of growth and the fact that the goal in traditional psychology is framed as being independent. And if we think about shifting that goal to becoming interdependent, you know, to really linking ourselves to what is the common good, then we can also think of our goal, from a spiritual perspective as remembering who we are, which puts a different flavor on the whole development aspect. You know, that it's not a matter that we're creating something new. We may be creating something new, but in large part what we're doing is we're recovering, we're remembering that we are in fact part of this very large cosmic energy field. We are connected to everything. Our thoughts influence people around us, not just ourselves, that we actually create our own reality, which is what we were talking about last month.
Well, and talk about quality. You can sense the depth of the quality when we come to that realization. You know, it's very related to that young man's experience, whereas he went into the retreat in a very independent thing, with a very independent attitude, which was, I need some time off, I need some quiet time, I'm going to read a book and relax. And what he discovered was interdependence, that there was great joy in getting to know people by just being in their presence without stories, of getting to know nature. You know, we bank on it all the time here at the retreat center, which is nature simply puts us into direct contact with that sense of interconnectedness and that interdependence. And I'm sure even you as a psychologist would send people outside all the time. I hope so anyway. But it is definitely something that you see all the time now in psychotherapy, which is get out in nature, spend time in nature. It puts us in contact with that, the one life, the experience of being part of the one life that we so often speak about on the show.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah.
Dorothy, I have a really quick quote that I would love to read. It's by Bertrand Russell, and it's so cool. We've got a few minutes left. He says that an individual human experience should be like a river, that it should be small at first, narrowly contained within its banks, and rushing passionately past rocks and over waterfalls. Gradually, the river grows wider, the banks recede, the waters flow more quietly, and in the end, without any visible break, they become merged in the sea and painlessly lose their individual being.
That's beautiful. Really beautiful.
I thought it was beautiful. Yeah, and this idea of actually the breadth is what I love about it. This idea of banks receding, and that it becomes wider and gentler, and that there's expanse to it, and there's not restriction is what
That's
comes
right.
in that for me. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And again,
really
that
beautiful.
The ego and the group, you know, it's like the ego always wants to stay the individual. And we somehow think we confuse maturity with becoming more of an individual. Whereas, you know, the soul is really about inclusiveness and the group. And so as we mature, I would say a goal would be to understand our place within the greater whole and see the ways in which group can be important to us, for sure.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, I agree.
Beautiful. So, Dorothy, we're close to a break. We have about another minute. Let's. You want to go into models? Let's set first.
Well, I think, again, if we're thinking about the kind of model of development that makes sense for us, I have another quote, which is, the network of relationships linking the human race to itself and to the rest of the biosphere is so complex that all aspects affect all others to an extraordinary degree. So it's that gestalt concept of, you know, the whole is greater than the parts, and that they all interact. We talked about emergence last time. It's the same kind of concept. So I hope we'll come back to that after the break.
Yes, indeed. Sounds wonderful. So, Dorothy, we'll be back. Listeners, join us. We're going to continue this conversation after these messages.
powerful your thoughts and beliefs are in determining your experience of your life? Is it really true that simply by changing some of the words you use in your day-to-day language, that you can change your life? I'm Megan Edge. Join me on Playing on the Edge, Radical Change with Ease, with my co-host, Dr. Pat, on Transformation Talk Radio. I look forward to seeing you there.
To find out more about Megan Edge, visit her website at meganedge.ca.
Hi, I'm Steve Kramer of Spirit Fire Radio, and I believe that meditation changes everything. It leads us in the direction of greater well-being, and that's a fact. I struggled with meditation for years. I understood the principles, but I found it hard to incorporate them into my everyday life. Spirit Fire's meditation practice changed that. It's called the Practice of Living Awareness, and it's taught in 14 steps. These are 14 tools that I can use in any moment, on and off the cushion. Steps like smile, flow, and ground of being support my clarity of mind while I'm navigating the ups and downs of modern life. That's why it's called the Practice of Living Awareness. If you'd like to add meditation to your daily experience, the Practice of Living Awareness is free, online, and it's suited for any level of practitioner. Visit spiritfire.com for more information. And be sure to check out Spirit Fire's meditation retreats in Western Massachusetts. It's all there at spiritfire.com.
Tune in to People Like Us Radio with Megan Lyons, transcending the trauma of the human experience. Megan will be raising the universal consciousness by empowering listeners with their own inner strength, working past trauma and abuse. Megan will show you how to find true healing and inner peace through the art and practice of self-love. Tune in every first and third Friday at 10 a.m. Pacific, 1 p.m. Eastern. For more information about Megan and her work, visit enterthelightllc.com.
What is a brilliant culture, and how do we create them? Why are they important? Claudette Rowley has created a breakthrough five-step process to help you align your culture with your business strategy for exceptional results. Looking for a culture that drives organizational excellence? Listen to Cultural Brilliance Radio, the second and fourth Friday of each month at 10 a.m. Pacific and 1 p.m. Eastern on Transformation Talk Radio. To learn more or work with Claudette, visit culturalbrilliance.com.
Would you like your next chapter to be free from fear and angst? Tune in to Your Next Chapter Radio, Navigating Through Life's Transitions with Shelley Ryan, the fourth Monday at 12 p.m. Pacific on TransformationTalkRadio.com. Shelley's contagious enthusiasm guides you through life's transitions deliberately, mindfully, and funnily. For Your Next Chapter coaching or to listen, visit YourNextChapterCoaching.com or call 602-617-8351. Next!
Welcome back, listeners, to Spirit Fire Radio. Great that you're with us. So, Dorothy, we were talking about development, and you know, it makes me think of a gap year. You know, we fall into this way of thinking that each stage of our development follows in such a sequential way, and these expectations come in. And I think of my cousin who took a gap year, and his parents just freaked out. And, you know, they saw it as this sort of, you know, he was moving away from this potential for his success. He did very well in high school and was accepted to a great college, and at the last minute decided he was going to take a gap year. It turned out to be such a rewarding experience. You know, we just have these models that we graduate high school, we go to college, we perhaps go to grad school, we begin a career, we start a family. You know, it's much more complex than that, as your quote, you know, was basically saying, that we've got to look around and realize that, you know, life is complex. It just can't be so linear. And each of us in our own right are so complex and different that you've got to allow, it's like these expectations and comparisons that rely on the past and the future, they just hold us into these sort of linear defaults that I find limiting. You know, it limits our potential.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, we have many examples of how life experiences can change the whole direction of our life, that it's not linear in that sense. But I think one of the most critical is that we assume that as you move along a linear track, you get better and better, or you get more and more mature. And so we would think that somebody who is 30 is more mature than someone who's 15, for example, or someone who is 60 is more mature than someone who's 30. And that's absolutely not the same, not the case, that these two do not go hand in hand.
And I also find that in that, there are these points in our lives that could happen to any one of us at any different time. You know, a divorce, the death of a loved one, that for some, you know, my partner, for instance, you know, his dad passed when he was a young child, and that affected the trajectory of his life, unexpected. For others, the death of a partner, you know, at who they've spent their entire life with, can just throw their maturity, you know, into a different direction, and a different level of maturity can come in, or, you know, relocating a new job, sort of these life events that really create births, growth spurts, that it is not the same for everybody, as you say, and our levels of maturity, we have these growth spurts at different times in our lives. So at different ages, we're at a different pace.
Absolutely. And one of the things that happens, I think, which is can be problematic, is that because we unconsciously assume this kind of linear growth path, we assume that as people get older and older, that they have also matured ethically and morally, and that they will be more responsible. In fact, we legally hold people more accountable if they're older rather than if they're very young. And that assumption then lays us open to being completely shocked when things happen differently. And I'm thinking, you know, of the experience that the world had, not just Americans had, of the American president on the world stage basically edifying Putin and throwing his own intelligence community under the bus. Right. And so we see, here's somebody he's in his 70s, but he clearly has not matured from a time of self-interest, self-aggrandizement. I'm sorry, I'm mispronouncing that. A very transactional, self-centered way of dealing with the world, to focusing on the common good and being able to look outside himself and being able to recognize the interconnections and the interrelationships that exist. And so it was very interesting that the British created that blimp of the baby Trump, because what they were saying was, you know, this is somebody who's just wah, wah, wah for myself. Although I would say in defense that the research on early childhood in not just human species, but other species, is that young children can be very altruistic. So it's not that we all start out selfish and then we have to mature from there.
Well, it is. I think what they're saying is he's acting quite immature, that age does not necessarily come responsibility. I mean, and that certainly illustrates this non-linearity. You would think that would be the case, but here is a fine example. I often think about Trump in comparison to Trudeau, you know, and this idea, and I know we're going to get into this next week. We had so much to talk about at this show. It went so fast, right? How time just moved so quickly. But this idea that we just get set in our ways, you know, that our thinking really just gets really ingrained, that we're not able to think out of the box as we get older. And I think of Trump as being in his 70s and Trudeau as being so young. And this idea of one seemingly being so mature, much more mature, and the breadth in which he can take information in. He's so much more flexible, and Trudeau, that is, and able to process in a way that feels more responsible and more mature than this person who's 70. I mean, that this week was, as an American, it was heartbreaking yesterday. I was I was just dumbfounded that he would side with a tyrant who has, you know, among so many crimes, actually killed innocent children. And I think of the civilians and the children, you know, in that bombing at the school. And then that would happen so close to Trump's zero tolerance and these orders, you know, to separate small children from their parents on American soil. And I just thought, here's this man siding with the tyrant and almost creating this equivalency. And I just thought, what a sad day. So progress, you know, we're going to talk about that next week. Social change. I mean, this is what we're talking about, social change and progress. It isn't always linear. It feels like we've just taken so many steps back. In fact, it almost feels like we've gone from a very organized leadership in America to this chaotic leadership in America. So it's not linear at all. You know, it feels quite the opposite. So
And so one of the things, before we have to end for today, I just want to mention a couple of things, Steve, in terms of, you know, if people are curious and wanting to help shift away from ingrained linear models and, you know, traditional ways of thinking, there are some tools that can be very interesting. One of the early ones that I used when I was working on this was the I Ching, to use that as a way of accessing the inner knowledge that I had about myself and what was going on in the world. And I would throw the I Ching every day, and then I would go back and look in the evening and see what had actually happened. Other people use astrological birth charts and transits to identify the patterns of energy at work and what will work well for them or not work well for them. Other people look at race structure in terms, again, of the energetic patterns. But there are some tools that have seemed, well, a friend of mine would call them woo-woo tools, but actually one of their important purposes is to help us break up these expectations and presuppositions that we have grown up with and start to look at life a little bit differently, a little bit broader, in a more flexible way, as you were saying.
Yes, and to do that, we need to be able to observe. We need to be able to observe ourselves. We need to be able to observe our mind and our responses. So I would add to that meditation, mindfulness practices as a way to generate that observer mind, to see yourself from a distance. And, you know, in that, you also recognize that on a higher level, we are all indeed interconnected. Dorothy, that's the end of the show. So listeners, we're going to continue this conversation because there's so much to talk about nonlinearity and social change. And that is directly related to the ways in which we mature and evolve as a humanity. So join us next week. Dorothy, it's been delightful. And we'll be back with you real soon.
Thank you for listening to Spirit Fire Radio. Tune in each Wednesday at 9 a.m. Pacific, 12 noon Eastern, for your weekly guide to purposeful living in practical spirituality. Join hosts Steve Kramer and Dorothy Riddle as they shine the light on universal spiritual principles and uncover ways that ageless wisdom can guide you in cultivating consciousness in your everyday life. Add to your awareness with Spirit Fire Radio. To learn more, visit spiritfireradio.com.